From Relay, this is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of television. This is episode 106, recorded spooky. It's Halloween, October 31st, 2025. I am your master of ceremonies, Jason Snell, and I'm joined again by Joe Adalian, the West Coast editor at Vulture and the author of the Buffering newsletter. Joe, welcome back.
Thank you, sir. You know, I wish I had some sort of fun Halloween name for you, but there's really, Adalian doesn't lend itself to creepy names.
It's okay. It's okay. It's Adalian. It rhymes with Italian.
Yeah, but nothing's scary, but, you know?
But nothing is scary.
As opposed to Jason, which your just name is automatically.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's absolutely. I have a Halloween name all the time.
Exactly.
That's what I have.
You are spirit Halloween in human flesh.
I mean, maybe. That's why I'm everywhere, in every abandoned building. I'll be there. Look for me. I'll be there.
Exactly.
All right. We should start with, why not Taylor Sheridan, the guy who I'd never even heard of before a couple of years ago. But yeah, if thanks. You haven't heard of Taylor Sheridan, he is the showrunner of Yellowstone, which is a huge hit, and then many, many other spinoffs and additional shows. He does Lioness on Paramount Plus.
He does everything on Paramount Plus.
And it's well, except for Yellowstone, which for various stupid reasons is on Peacock, but is still produced by Paramount. So his deal with Paramount runs through, I think, 2029 for TV. But you know what? He signed a new deal with NBC Universal. It doesn't start for ages. Movies first, TV later. But in the meantime, he'll still be doing stuff on Paramount. Now, there's a lot of interesting quirks here, but you wrote a piece it's a nice take, Joe. David Ellison at Paramount doesn't actually need Taylor Sheridan. This is, you know, is this a big deal or is it not?
Well, first of all, do you know how much it killed me to write something nice, even semi-nice or hopeful about David Ellison?
I did. And also
trying to very much, you know, I didn't even promote this story on social media because it's like, I can't deal with the like response. We're like, oh, we're just trying to suck up to the man. Look, as I wrote in this story, this deal is embarrassing for David Ellison. You know, Mr. I am the king of the media world now, and I'm talent friendly, and I'm just going to make, you know, and one of the first things he said is like, we have Taylor Sheridan and it's great. And we're just going to, you know, what? And then boom, he's gone. It's this deal. If anything, what was delicious about it was it really was Taylor Sheridan's personal referendum to some degree on David Ellison and or his own ego needs. Right. It could just be I don't want to take anything away from Donna Langley and everyone else. Clearly, someone made him feel wanted, and he wants to be wanted. He, you know, he has an ego like everyone else. I mean, he has probably a much bigger ego than everyone else. It's sort of like, you know, between him and Kevin Costner, like, why did I sometimes feel semi-bad for Kevin Costner? I don't know why. I think it was a referendum for wanting to basically go, you know, somewhere else where he sort of was the king of the world, as opposed to this new regime, which sort of is bringing in, you know, in some ways, Cindy Holland, who's ahead of streaming now, is in her own ways a rock star. And she's going to be wanting to, you know, executives come in and they want to put their stamp on things. They often don't want to just sort of, you know, make what's already there their own if they don't have to. So he's probably not right for having a, inkling of let me go somewhere else, but doing it so soon, right? That was interesting. It says to me, though, he's also smart because he probably knows that the likelihood of the shows that he produces over the next couple of years of being as successful as the ones his last 5 years is not that high. Just any producer, whether it's Aaron Spelling or Stephen Bochco or even Shonda Rhimes and Ryan Murphy, you know, even Dick Wolf, like they have down periods and history says that Taylor's probably due for one soon. So, hey, if you're smart and you've got good agents, you think, let me strike while my leverage is hot.
Yep.
But the good news for Ellison and Cindy, over at Paramount Streaming is that they've got plenty of time to plan. And so they have him for 3 years. They have all of his IP that's already hugely successful. They have him on the hook for creating more IP that can potentially be successful. And, you know, they're even doing movies with him. I mean, it was also revealed this week that they've finalized a deal for him to write and be a producer on a new Call of Duty movie for Paramount Pictures. So they'll be fine. It's embarrassing in the long term. It could mean saying goodbye to a key part of their talent base. But, you know, the effect of this deal will not really be felt until 5 years from now, because it takes a while to get shows ready, especially in streaming. So, and Sheridan, even with Sheridan, who works fast. So within 5 years, who knows whether, you know, the state of the immediate world. It's that's the risky part for Universal, is they're betting on 3 years from now, and that can be a little dangerous.
Yeah, it is. I was thinking of sports analogies of like free agent signings, and this is one that, you know, it's fascinating because it is striking while the iron is hot, for sure. He's got ultimate leverage here. But to go so far out, it reminds me actually of aging athletes, right? And it's like, you want this star athlete, but to get him now, you're going to pay for the years that he's good and also many years where he is old and breaking down or retired.
Right. I think that's a little bit too much for Sheridan. I don't think he'll be breaking down, but it's the same. Yes, I agree with you in theory.
Yeah, and I mean, my analogy only goes this far, which is, now is the time of maximum leverage. The danger between now and, you know, for TV producers, like you said, they maybe have some misses, the bloom comes off the rose a little bit, and then they can't make as much money. But if you extend now, you're going to extend and maximize, even if you're buying, you know, buying work that is 5 years out. And that seems to be the dynamic here, is like, if he could get somebody to pay him a lot of money, even though it's not an irresponsible deal at NBC Universal. All these deals have benchmarks of his involvement and success over time and all the, I mean, he gets paid whatever. I think there's a report about it being like $1 billion. It's like, well, yes, if he generates a zillion hits
for
NBC,
asterisk,
he'll get $1 billion, and they will be happy to give it to him because they will have made so much money. But like, it's, now's the time for him to do that. And if you can get that deal, you take it, because yes, like you said, in 3 years, he might not be able to get that deal.
Right. And you know, exactly. And look, I mean, you know, and it is a risk because, you know, Netflix spent a lot for Shonda Rhimes and Ryan Murphy. Arguably, they didn't get much from Ryan Murphy.
Exactly.
It wasn't a complete loss, depending upon, again, it depends upon, you know, it's interesting, when the story broke in Puck and Matt Bellany, there wasn't a number attached to it, right? Which is unusual, because my assumption to some degree was it would have come from Sheridan's camp, but it may just as well have come from the Paramount camp leaking to get ahead of it and to win some goodwill, perhaps. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But there was no big number. Usually when these sort of leaks come out, the agents want to put a number out there, right? Because that's their, speaking as someone who spent, you know, 10 years at Variety and working trades and talking to a lot of agents about a lot of deals, and they want to make sure that they get their name of their agency in the paper, and they also want to get the maximum amount of money. And I would go back and forth with the networks, like, well, is it this much? Is it, you know, so it's all a little bit crappy, but there was no, so you're right. We don't know how much is pay or play, like, no matter what he gets paid. I would imagine his agents are going to push for a decent amount of just signing my name money.
Sure.
But I also think Tyler Sheridan, and in this world of streaming and everything, is a little bit of a bet on yourself kind of guy. So maybe that sort of limits the downside.
He does not lack for self-confidence, right?
No, he does not. But he also, his agents want to make sure he gets paid. And especially in streaming, where you don't know, and who knows what the business model will look like in 5 years. And, you know, if the limited backend is even less. This also strikes me to some degree, you know, Comcast has spent a lot of money the last year and a half on sports, the NBA, other sports, and the sports division is just sort of taking control of that company in so many ways. Less money to make shows at NBC, and I was hearing about tension in the company about that, sort of like the sports are getting all the money. Well, now Donna Langley sort of has her NBA deal, right? She has her big, flashy, I'm here, Peacock is serious, yeah, NBC is serious, this is what I'm going to do. And I would have to think that was probably some of her getting approved within the company dynamics, because this would have to go to the top of the company, them saying, like, you know, look, we got to even this out a little bit. And what better way than this? And, you know, personally, if I was running a company, I would prefer to spend the same amount of money on taking a lot more shots.
I think
history proves that you get more success that way. You discover people on their way up, more rookies. But that's not, you know, these are corporations, play corporation games, sure, and so do Hollywood studios.
And they may do that too, but they also want to make a splash. And when you have a situation like now, they're kind of wanting to make that splash, that NBA deal. I do understand that. This is actually a good pivot, because the other big topic that I wanted to bring up at the beginning of the show here is what's going to happen with Warner Brothers Discovery. And one of the thoughts that I saw, and this might have been Matt Bellany, actually, is the idea that the Taylor-Sheridan deal might make more sense if NBCU is empire building. And one of the things they're thinking is, because Peacock, for example, Peacock's not even an international streamer. So you're paying this guy, and then where does his content go outside the U.S.? Do you have global ambitions? You can sell it, yeah, but do you have more global ambitions than that? Other than that, maybe this is a sign that NBC Universal is and Comcast is interested in spending money. I don't know if I really will follow this theory here, but I think it's interesting in the context of who wants Warner Brothers Discovery, because they're for sale. Somebody's going to buy them. It's just a question of who. And it does sound, in some of the reporting I've seen, like Comcast is interested in doing that. They are definitely one of the potential players here. So in the end, by the time Taylor Sheridan comes to NBC Universal, I think the joke that, again, I want to say that it might have been Bellany who made it was, you know, is he going to be on HBO by the time gets there?
Sure.
Sure.
You don't really know it. And look, I will say this about all these conversations about Parabros or, you know, Warner Brothers Comcast. There's a lot of spin and not misinformation, because I don't think anyone's doing it liberally, but the people are playing games. People are doing diligence. People are trying to bid up the price for their competitors. Mm-hmm. Things that look certain may not happen. A few weeks ago, I happened to be reading a story about the time when CBS was very, very close to being bought by QVC or merging with QVC, and Barry Diller was going to come in and he was going to run all of CBS. And that deal fell apart. And a few months later, it became Westinghouse, which then became, of course, Viacom.
Yeah.
Disney also, before Cap Cities, like someone else was, I forget who was going to buy Caps, or Disney was going to buy, I think maybe NBC, there was some talk. So you never know where things are going. And I think, you know, what's strange things now is the regulatory environment and everyone thinking, well, you got to kiss up to Trump. There's this analyst, Rich Greenfield. I hate to even give him some oxygen because he's... I like Rich. I've talked to him before. I don't use him as a quote anymore because I just find just some of the tech. He's like, he was an early and often advocate of Netflix, which, you know what? Bet on that pony and got rich off it. You know, he was very, very much ahead of his time. So I give him credit for that. He's not at all a dumb person, but some of his ideas are just insane. He thinks that Comcast should go after Warner Brothers and promise Trump that he's going to put Charlie Kirk's widow in charge of a combined MSNBC.
Oh, I saw that.
And I'm just like, please just stop it now. I don't know what's going to happen. I think, you know, it's weird. Like I've always, you know, Paramount and Warner Brothers together is an old dream of Leslie Moonves's. And 20 years, it would make so much sense for CBS News and CNN to be part of the same company. It's scary as hell now because of current management. And I think a lot of Hollywood also thinks they're a little bit frightened of Ellison. And I think what you're seeing is people saying, like, maybe we should kill this thing in its grave and not let it get any bigger. If he really wants to put out there that he wants to be the next Rupert Murdoch, maybe we need to sort of whatever. And so I love the idea of Netflix, for example, and we're going to talk about that. Netflix, potentially, they're doing their due diligence.
Yeah.
But them wanting to own HBO, my God, that would be delicious. You know, instead of we're going to try to become HBO before HBO becomes us, well, we're just going to buy HBO now.
They finally get all those franchises they wanted.
Exactly. Although the thing is, franchises, although to me, I would almost think what they really run is just the Warner Brothers studio and let HBO go somewhere else, because they don't really need HBO Max. The last thing Netflix needs is HBO Max. And
Apple might actually take that.
Apple, yes. Yeah, and see, there's, by the way, see, this actually does make sense, because if you have HBO powered by Apple and you suddenly have HBO on cable, like getting that cable business, that would some limited. I still think if I were Apple, I longer time ago would have bought a cheap cable network like Stars or whatever and just made Apple into a premium. Why not? Why not just Apple, you know,
generate some more money?
I think premium makes sense. And I think for Netflix, potentially, yes. And maybe, you know, but I, you know, do you have the Netflix and HBO brands together? Maybe. It feels like you could have Netflix and then HBO is just a tile. Maybe.
I don't know. It's an interesting idea. I think that this is the point. So Netflix is looking. Obviously, there have been many deals from David Ellison, or many proposals by David Ellison thus far. rebuffed. Comcast seems interested about the like approvals from the Trump administration. You know, I saw a story about this that said, that kind of poo-pooed it, that I thought was pretty good, that said, look, Brian Roberts, Comcast, they got a lot of money. It's not going to be a problem. Like, I mean, and I know that is a really, really cynical and corrosive thing to say, but I think it's true. It's like Trump, you know, hates NBC and he thinks they're very liberal, and the MSNBC has been, which they're pushing off onto Versant, by the way, is against him and all that. Let, you know, what will it take to make him turn around? Well, I can think of millions of things that could make him turn around.
But not even that, by the way. Everyone forgets, by the way, Trump did not want the Warner Brothers AT&T deal to go through, right? And because of that, it got delayed, and it took a long time, and HBO Max lost some. I mean, that's one of the things that hurt HBO Max's, is that it took an extra long time for them to even launch that, because the whole, and then of course AT&T messed everything up.
Sure.
But so Trump can, and he can get ways of saying, no, you can't. Well, you take him to court. And the court so far, especially when it comes to something like business stuff, if you're willing to spend the money and wait the time, and you don't need to do it now, which I don't think Comcast needs to do it now, it could be a 2-year process. But if they want it, they can do it. And then I hope that in 2 years, like maybe he loses Congress or whatever, a lot can happen.
Yeah.
So it's everyone's saying, oh, you gotta, it's not, we're as much as we are in a wannabe, you know, dictatorship fascist state, we still have a court system that can still overrule things. And I don't think Trump is going to, like, it's much easier for him to put troops wherever he wants in violation of courts than it is to sort of stop mergers, right? And so he can slow it down. He can definitely make their life hell. But at the end of the day, courts will decide whether or not it's legal.
The way you think, but I will also just make the same point again. We also live in a world where they could just bribe him.
Well, yeah, that's the faster way. Sure, that's the easy path.
Where it's like, oh, how NBC Universal? How will they convince Trump? Is like, again, I can think of plenty of ways where rich executives with rich corporations can make it grease the skids for it to happen.
But we're already going to have the peacock bathrooms at the Trump ballroom. So because they made they've made a contribution, so they should at least get some branding.
I mean, I don't know where Apple's contribution is going, but you know, we'll see. So speaking of Apple, I wanted to say, Eddie Q, you know, was on, it's Bellamy again, was on The Town, and he said, you know, we're not really interested in that stuff, but we look at stuff from time to time. And Apple says that about all mergers and acquisitions that they do. They look, they do a lot of looking. I think this is one of those cases, and I know for a fact, not about this, but I know for a fact that this is a thing that Apple likes to do. Apple likes to kick the tires. And I think part of the reason Eddie Q likes to kick the tires on mergers is he learns stuff. Right. Like if you get
finds out their books.
Yeah. If you get Warner Brothers Discovery to open their books and explain how HBO is working and how it's looking and all of that, even if it's all under NDA and all that, Eddie Q walks out of there with a better idea about how that aspect of a competitor works and how the business works. And for Apple, that has only been doing this for a short amount of time, that's kind of interesting. That also said, if I had a nickel for every time Apple said they weren't interested in something and then they did it, I would have lots of nickels, because that is. And so I don't think, I think it's far less likely that the Apple will do something than they would do it. But it's not zero. I think that you know, David Zaslav is the one who wins the more. If NBC Universal is like, no, we're interested, and then Netflix is like, we've hired a bank to look at buying Warner Brothers Discovery, and David Ellison is making all these bids, who's the winner there? It's Zaz, right? Because he's gotten the bidding war he wanted to get the highest value, because then he gets the most money, and that's really what he's after here. And it's you know, putting yourself up for sale in this moment with these bidders is, I think it's canny. If you only have one bidder, it's not going to be such a great deal.
And the only loser, of course, once again, will be employees at all the companies affected.
Exactly.
I mean, especially fact that David Ellison is laying off too. Sorry.
Yeah. Especially if you assume that the whoever buys this has a studio of their own. I mean, maybe not, you know, not Apple so much and not Netflix so much, but like if it's NBC Universal or it's Paramount, They're going to own two movie studios, and I know they've said, oh, we'll keep them separate. I mean, come on.
I mean, sure. Sure, there's technically a 20th Century Fox movie studio, but it ain't what it used to be.
No.
Which is again, why I think there are a lot of people who want to stop the Ellisons from buying it. And, you know, the fact that Ellisons, they've started laying off 2,000 people just because. Not because, and there isn't a lot of overlap with Skydance. Skydance only had like 1,300 people and a little bit on the movie side, but that's the cuts at CBS News, the cuts at CBS, the cuts at Paramount Plus. Not a damn bit of them have anything to do with, oh, well, overlapping functions. It has to do with, why not? Let's see what we can do with even less. And it's the unfortunate thing is that we've already had all these rounds of cuts, and it's these companies don't seem to realize they're digging themselves even deeper into a hole. They're making it harder to compete with Netflix and Amazon and Apple even more, because while those companies have also had some adjustments because of how things have changed in the streaming wars and where we are, it just stuff isn't getting promoted as effectively. The interfaces aren't improving as much. There aren't people making strategic decisions about what kinds of shows to make, and it's a very top down sort of management structure that David Ellison and people like him think, or Zaslav think, like, well, as long as I'm here, that's all that really matters. I can say we need this and we do that and it's done. It's like, well, no, it takes a lot to build these show, build these services and to build individual shows. And when I saw people at CBS who worked on Matlock and Ghost, two big franchises that CBS launched. And one of the main reasons they launched so well is amazing PR and amazing marketing, and as well as the platform being strong. And of course, the creators doing good job, but like CBS just did so much for months ahead of time. They delayed that. It was a strategy. And some of these other streamers are just like, we put the show on our platform. Why isn't anyone watching? No one's watching. Oh, well, I guess it must be a hit. A flop. Let's do something else. And it just doesn't work that way. Unless you're Netflix, in which case you really can just drop something on and watch it become a hit.
Mm, yeah. Well, we will see. Sorry. We will see what happens.
That was a little side rant there.
No, it's good. Yeah,
but
yeah.
I feel strongly like is there a waste in Hollywood? Sure, but I don't think so anymore. I just realized I'm defending publicists, but I'm going to defend publicists. They do good stuff.
Well, you got to pick your battles, and that's not a bad one. This episode of Downstream is brought to you by Claude from Anthropic. Claude is a next generation AI assistant built by Anthropic and trained to be safe, accurate, and secure to help you do your best work. I used Claude recently to solve a very interesting problem. I am building a library of special members-only versions of my podcast, The Incomparable. And our archive, they're all supposed to be ad-free, but our archive includes all of these ads that were burned into the old episodes when they were released. And this project has been ongoing. It's been really difficult to get through hundreds and hundreds of episodes. And I had this moment when I realized, you know what I can do is I can use transcripts to solve this problem. And I used Claude. I said, Claude, here's a folder of transcripts in subtitle format, which is the format that my little transcription engine uses. I said, can you write a Python script that will find when I'm introducing a sponsor, when I say things like, time for a break so I can tell you about our sponsor, can you identify that in the transcript? And also, ideally, where I thank the sponsor at the end for sponsoring the podcast. And can you generate basically an edit list with the context of all of those transcripts? And what's great, again, AI is not there to solve all your problems for you alone. AI is there to work with you to solve your problems. So I got a Python script from Claude. It wasn't quite right. I needed to make some adjustments. We worked on it together. And at the end, I had a script that in like 5 seconds was able to blast through like 500 episodes worth of podcast transcript and generate an edit list with context so we could use our human brains to judge, is that really a sponsor that needs to be clipped, or is it just, you know, a false hit or a joke of a sponsor? And I got it exactly where I wanted it, thanks to Claude. Claude is for the AI. For minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that understands your workflow and thinks with you, not for you. Whether you're debugging code or strategizing a business move, Claude can extend your thinking to tackle problems that matter. It doesn't just give you answers. This is the whole point here. It helps you think through the problem. The act of writing the prompt sometimes really clears your mind about what your actual problem is. I find that a lot, especially when I'm doing coding tasks. The act of oh, it's just a simple thing, a simple sentence. And then I realized, no, it's more complicated than that. And my brain has to work through the problem. Claude has internal and external research capabilities that go way more deep than basic web search, comprehensive, reliable analysis with proper citations for clients, turning hours of research into minutes. Claude can have context from your calendar, email, and all of your go-to tools. It's like having a little, you know, central brain for all your work, so you don't have to dig through multiple tools and documents. Are you ready to tackle bigger problems, even as big as hundreds and hundreds of podcast transcripts? Yes. Sign up for Claude today. You'll get 50% off Claude Pro when you go to claude.ai/downstream. That's claude.ai/downstream for 50% off your first 3 months of Claude Pro, including access to all the features mentioned in today's episode. It's all lowercase letters, claude.ai/downstream. Thank you, Claude, for supporting Downstream. Let's do some letters from listeners. A different kind of follow-up. Gavin wrote in and said, Disney is not yet able to move into its Hulu Everywhere future because in Japan, it is still Star. In Japan, Hulu was acquired by Nippon Television Network Corporation about 15 years ago and is a different entity than Hulu in the U.S. It's mostly a collection of Japanese TV shows and some old seasons of U.S. network stuff from a lot of different providers. As a result, in the Disney app, we still have the Star tab. So that's there's an example. Like, Hulu is everywhere it can be. And then Star, I guess, is now the fallback, when it used to be that Star was everywhere except the U.S. and it was Hulu. But this is a good data point that there's a different Hulu in Japan. Who knew? I didn't know. Thank you, Gavin. No idea. And Jackson writes in and says, Kia ora from the 604, little New Zealand talk there. With the F1 movie and the U.S. rights deal with Apple, does Drive to Survive stay with Netflix? Producing that show requires access to teams, tracks, footage that only F1 and Liberty Media can provide and might only want to provide to their worldwide partner, Apple. Apple is a U.S. partner only. I just want to say they're not a worldwide partner. Does Drive to Survive stay with Netflix for its larger audience, especially given that it only drops once a year? Use the reach to bring in new fans who then pay Apple all year to watch the actual races. I would say Netflix is a fantastic platform for Formula One. And as long as Netflix and Formula One want to continue that show, it will continue on Netflix, regardless of the races being on Apple, just like it was regardless of the races being on whatever their local TV partners are. So I think if Netflix is cool on Formula One going forward, I would expect that Apple would pick that show up. But I think that's all about Netflix wanting to continue it.
Interesting.
Okay. No opinions? I mean, it is sports. I know that.
I think Netflix likes its kind of sort of tangential sports programming. So I don't know. Maybe they, you know, if it does well for them, they're going to want it.
Yeah.
You know, if they're not, I don't think they did the show just to get F1
certainly
as a sport, because they weren't even thinking about sports.
No.
So I think if it makes sense, it's sort of like, what is it? Isn't Inside the NBA now on
ESPN?
Which makes some sense, but it's not
by TNT.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so.
I think it's a different, it's totally different, and it is worldwide. And Jackson says worldwide partner Apple. It's not, Apple's not their worldwide partner. So having a Netflix everywhere in the world benefits every single media partner that F1 has worldwide. So I think in the end, the ball's in Netflix's court. If there comes, but I will say yes, if it comes a point where Netflix doesn't want to do Drive to Survive anymore, then I would not be surprised if Apple picked it up, because it's a natural.
Yes.
Of course they would. But Netflix is a pretty good platform for advertising your sport, and I think it will continue to be. Before we go, I like to do TV picks at the end of the show. And our document, Joe, has not put in a TV pick. Do you need a minute, Joe? Do you want me to go first?
I can tell you. I'm going to be a little bit weird. I'm going to offer one that I actually haven't seen yet, but I can't wait to watch. And it comes out next week, and I think a lot of your listeners will want to watch. And that is the new Vince Gilligan Apple TV show, Pluribus.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I have no idea what the heck the show is about. I have not watched my screeners.
He doesn't want you to know.
I've watched the screener. I've watched the trailer. I'm like, oh, what is this? Okay, I'm going to watch. Because it's Vince Gilligan, it's Rhea Seehorn, and it's a weekly show. I'm just going to let it wash over me and hope that the early buzz I'm hearing from my critic friends who have watched it is that it really is good and that Apple is making its next great TV show. So, and there are 9 episodes, which is good. Which is actually one less than many Apple shows, I guess. But it's a treat. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I hope it's not too dense. I worry about, you know, some comparisons early on that it's sort of Severance-like. As much as I love Severance, Severance can be a little bit dense. Vince is really good at telling stories that have, you know, that are easy to understand compelling and, yep, and the action moves. So I'm you know, the expectations are high, which is unfortunate for it because it's got a very high bar to cross, but I have every confidence in this team to meet them. So I can't wait.
And for November everybody 7th. Who says, wait a second, what do you mean a weird sort of sci-fi-ish show from the guy who did Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, I'll just say, yes, but we all got to know Vince Gilligan from his work on the X-Files. So it's okay.
Yes. And then also we're getting an X-Files reboot at some point too. So that's great as well. Not from Vince, but from, I think the guy who did, movie.
We'll see. We'll see if that happens or not, but if it happens, then great. My TV pick is, I kind of wasn't sure what I was going to pick. So I'm just going to pick a favorite of mine on YouTube. Seth Meyers does a digital extra every week that they're in production on, I think it's Thursday at the end of the week of production, which is called Corrections, where they go through all the mistakes that they've made that have been pointed out in the YouTube comments of their show. It has taken on a life of its own. It's great. It is fantastic. And if you really like that vibe that I like of the audience has gone home and the only people who are left to laugh in the studio are the producers and the crew. That's what this one has. I think it's very funny. And it's loose. And I think Seth Meyers is just so good, but I think maybe he's at his best in this because it's even less, like, he already doesn't stand for his monologue. He does it at the desk and all of that. And this is even more, I think, in his wheelhouse. It's just a little bit more ramshackle and silly, and I love it. I watch it every week.
Seth Meyers and chill Seth Meyers.
It's so good.
You know, I've seen, I always see this pop up on my YouTube. I will watch his closer looks. I've never watched the Corrections, but now Corrections, does it air on the actual show or is it just a digital exclusive?
It's YouTube only.
Oh, okay. Well, then I need to check that out.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. And the more you watch it, the funnier it gets because then they're referencing the previous things that happened in Corrections and it's a whole thing, but it's very good.
The reason I love doing this podcast, Jason, is because not only do I get to spout endlessly and rant about stuff, some of which I know something about and something maybe not so much, but I also learned something. So I've learned something today.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Well, that's one to grow on, Joe. This brings us to the end of Downstream. If you're not a Downstream Plus subscriber, we also discussed Google and Disney and their carriage dispute, the uncanny reinvigoration of Dancing with the Stars as a streaming and broadcast show, Apple's deal with Formula One, what the heck happened with Disney and Doctor Who. For every other episode, more or less, most of the show is available just for supporters. So if you'd like to support us too, go to downstream.plus. You will get full versions of every single episode, access to the Relay Discord, bonus shows from Relay, and a whole lot more. If you have a question or a suggestion for the podcast, go to downstreamfeedback.com. We love to hear from you. Love to your mothers. You can find me over at sixcolors.com. I appear on many other podcasts at Relay and over at The Incomparable. And Joe, where can people find you?
Very few other podcasts, but I am available on Blue Sky at TV Mojo, MOJOE. And also, of course, on Vulture with my buffer and through my buffering newsletter. So just Google Joe Adalian buffering Vulture, yeah, and you get a subscription link and it's free.
You could just Google buffering Vulture and you will get it.
You could even do that, yes, because then you don't have to worry about trying to spell my
name. Adalian, no.
Exactly, which, yeah, no one should have to do that.
It's great. All right, Joe, it's been a pleasure as always. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir. Happy Halloween to anyone. I hope you had a good, safe Halloween.
Yeah, that's right. Happy Halloween / hope you had a good Halloween if you didn't listen the moment that this show was posted. And for those of you where it's still Halloween, thank you. Boy, priorities. All right, we'll see you in a couple weeks.